This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears. I'm joined, as always, by Bradley Chambers. The show is brought to you by three sponsors tonight, the first being Jam Software, makers of enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies in education. Secondly, Shobi, an iPad app for paperless classrooms. Shobi makes it easy to assign, collect, and review student work and provide rich feedback with annotations and voice notes. And finally, this episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial and 10% off, visit squarespace.com/outofschool and enter the offer code PUPIL at checkout. A better web starts with your website. Good evening, Bradley. How are you?
Fantastic. It is 2 degrees here, basically. I think with the wind chill, it's like 9 degrees. Chris, you get to, you know, it's funny, and we should probably maybe do a show about this, not even really technology related, but about school closings. Because, you know, it was 9 degrees at like 8 o'clock here, and at 10 o'clock it was 13 degrees. Most of the schools in our area that are public did a two-hour delay, which to me makes no sense. I realize it's because of buses.
Yeah.
But it's just going to be, I mean, 9 or 13, what does it matter?
Yeah. It's not really, it doesn't really change the behavior of ice or water or anything, does it really?
Well, I can see if it's an icy concern, because obviously the sun can come up and melt it, but it's just cold. And it really screws parents up when it's a delay. Most parents we talk to would almost rather close than delay.
Yeah, I can't honestly think that I've heard of that in Scotland at all. Either you're open or you're closed, basically, I think is my experience. I'm trying to think of any situation where I've heard of schools delaying their opening. I don't think that's something that MD would do here.
And it really screws up our fine arts classes like music, Spanish, Bible, and things like that, because we rotate those on a 6-day rotation. So there's like, you know, if Monday is day one, the next Monday will be day six because we have 6 fine arts classes.
Yeah.
And so if you delay, well, what happens to those that you missed? You've got to make them up some other time. But if you miss the whole day, we just basically, like, let's say we were going to be closed tomorrow and tomorrow's day two. Well, Monday's just day two. Like the whole everything, yeah. You know. So it's not like Monday is day one, Tuesday is day two. It kind of rotates, and so it just you kind of push that day, and it works. But yeah, delays really mess that up.
Yeah, I think one of the things that happened here a couple of years ago, there was a really a big sort of windstorm was predicted for Scotland, and a lot of the schools, in fact, most of the schools actually preemptively closed. They announced they were going to be closed the next day, regardless of what happened with the weather. And that was something that I think that was the first time, I think, in my lifetime that I could remember Scottish schools closing in advance of something actually happening. I think people are just getting a lot more cautious about this kind of stuff these days. But late starts, I don't think it makes much difference for us either. Either it's bad enough the school is shut, or it's not bad enough and it's open.
And part of the problem is in our part of town or in our region of the country, we don't get winter weather a lot, and so we're ill-prepared for it. Yeah. I mean, the joke was that we had like 2 inches of snow last year, and it shut down the Atlanta interstate system.
Huh.
And, I mean, that was the big joke across the news, but, like, we're just not prepared for it. Our cities don't have all this, like, the ice scrapers and things, and, yeah, we just don't know what we're doing.
Well, it doesn't make sense to tool up for something that is once in 100 years, really, is it?
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a winter weather season, so we're busy, you know, making sure you're reminding parents to keep their contact information updated in our system, because when we do, we are going to close or delay. You know, we sound it off from everywhere: email, Twitter, Facebook. We have a call out system as well. So yeah, it's just funny how that's changed. We had people calling yesterday. Hey, are you guys going to delay? Are you going to delay? Are you going to delay? It's like, we will let you know. Like, that's one thing people can't say about our school is like that we don't communicate. In fact, we may over communicate. So yeah, times have changed.
Yeah, that's an interesting topic all in itself, is how do you, if you have some critical piece of information, how do you ensure that it gets to every family? And that's it's something that I think is kind of maybe falling apart a little bit. Like, email, for the past maybe 6 years or so, email has been a very reliable way to do that. But I feel like right now we're certainly seeing more of this, where parents are kind of falling out of the way of checking their email. And we're looking at maybe getting in some other systems as well, like SMS, broadcast, or whatever, to kind of make sure we reach everybody in those situations.
Something we've been discussing is, and this is really like a communication theory, is what message is appropriate for what medium? Because what we've typically done is we have a big notes home email that goes home on Tuesday, but we're finding that people just don't read it because it's so long, and things will stay on there for 6 weeks at a time. Like, people are always wanting to promote whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
And we've changed that to where we have like a master one on the website that's only monthly. And then we only email home like what's pertinent for this week. Mm-hmm. You know, and the goal was to make every bullet point like a tweet size, where it's like you could easily scan it. Because, you know, certain things, like, you don't want to do a call out and call every family with an automated message to remind them to bring cookies tomorrow for something. I mean, that's you know, that's probably best suited for an email. But now, and we're finding that too, that people are overloaded with emails and Facebook alerts, and that they don't always see everything. And that's another problem with Facebook, is just because you post it and they follow you, that doesn't mean it's going to appear in their feed.
Well, this is with the new sort of algorithmic filtering of that stuff from Facebook, it's very hard to be sure you're getting through in that channel.
So, yeah, that's where we're at. And that's something we always think about come winter. But we send it off from the rooftops when we close everything but a pigeon at your door.
You should have a big cannon or something on the roof of the school. We just fire it off and people see
it. We still have kids will show up. It's like snow on the ground. People mm-hmm. show up. It's like, all right. Anyways, let's thank our first sponsor of the night. It's the fine folks at Squarespace. You guys know Squarespace. They are the fantastic all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. If you want a free trial, go to squarespace.com/out of school and enter the offer code PUPIL at checkout. A better web starts with your website. Now, they've got a brand new version 7 that's a new back-end system. My website already runs on it. Your website already runs on it. It's fantastic. Now, the cool thing about Squarespace is if you've got a one-page website that you want to do, it works perfect for that. If you want to run a large website with e-commerce, works perfect for that as well. Now, if you pay by the year, you get a free domain name included. Otherwise, it's just $8 a month for the starter package. Again, all plans include e-commerce. Their back-end stuff is handled via Stripe. And big news from Stripe this week, they're now doing all the payments for Kickstarter. That was pretty big for them. But the cool thing about Squarespace is there's nothing to manage or to host. You don't have to go get a server from somewhere, install some code, keep it updated. You just sign up, and it's the front-end system. It's the server space. It's everything. They have a great app that you can blog from your iPhone or iPad. And they have great 24/7 support via email and chat. That's absolutely fantastic. So, again, if you want a website for your school, for your club, squarespace.com/out of school.
Yep. Good times. Good times.
I do like it. I think that Squarespace, I mean, again, the joke is they sponsor all the podcasts, but I think the web would be worse without them because there's so many things that, you know, Squarespace is just perfect for. Like my blog, I would never think about moving it from Squarespace because it's so easy. Like I don't want to focus on like updating plugins because I manage like 4 or 5 WordPress websites for like freelance, you know, gigs. I would love to move to Squarespace. That's not my decision. There's always plugins to update. It's always wanting me to update to WordPress 4.1. And I don't know if I should do it or not because I don't know if it's going to break some custom plugin. I don't want to deal with that. So that's why I like Squarespace. It allows me just to focus on what I want to do.
Yeah, I think the kind of overriding theme of this podcast over the past 6 months is that you and I now don't have time to deal with that kind of low-level stuff anymore. And we're always looking for the more reliable, the more automated, the more simplified, the more managed service whenever we can find it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So we have a really, I think, to me, a topic that's long overdue. And I don't even know how we've waited this long to talk about it. It is teaching presentation skills to students.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it's something that I think is one of these skills that, you know, traditionally you only sort of vaguely touch on it as part of your school career. But, you know, you and I know and everybody knows that the people in an organization who can present well are extremely valuable to that organization. And it's something that I think is a very, very important skill for the world that we live in today. And I think it's very badly underrepresented in a lot of the assessment systems that we use and a lot of the curricula that we use, that having this particular skill, I think it makes a huge, big difference to not just a pupil's own confidence, but also their employability in the future as well.
Well, I agree, because this is something, it's kind of like in Spanish class. You know, it's hard to automate the process of listening to a student speak and have conversations in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something that technology-wise we can grade. You know, there are things, that's why a teacher is perfect for that. You can't automate that process. And this is something that I think for the longest time, we viewed, can you do a presentation to can you make a PowerPoint?
Yes, I completely agree with that. I think one of the biggest limitations of any curricula that does try and touch this is that too often they just look at presentation skills as assembling the graphical elements of a presentation file. And I know that in the course I teach, administration and IT, one of the things that the students are asked to do is they're given a half-finished PowerPoint. And by half-finished, I mean it's literally three or four slides with a picture and a title on it. And the task they have to do is to put in two more slides and add two more pictures and kind of line them up in the right order in the presentation, which is quite weak sauce, I think, compared to what we expect our students to do many years before that in their school career. You know, 4 or 5 years before that, we expect far more of them in that area than they're asked for at the exam level.
That's a great point, because when it comes, let's look at like how we do essay writing. You know, that's some of the things that in my high school we really focused on, is like how to write a 3.5 essay. Mm-hmm. We don't give students like, you know, three of the five paragraphs, or we don't give them the intro and the conclusion, say, hey, fill in the middle. And yeah. You know, we're more concerned with like how it's constructed. And you know, the teacher might give you comments like, well, I agree with your point, but you didn't explain it well. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of stuff with presentations I think we should be thinking about is, well, yeah, you have all the tools, but you didn't persuade me on anything. And that's part of it. It's like salesmanship in a way. Are you able to present your idea in a way where I'm interested in it and you can possibly convince me of something?
Yeah, I think there's certainly different ways you can look at the whole question of presentation as is it just a persuasion job, or it can be a communication job, like an informative presentation rather than a persuasive one. And this use of language and rhetoric is more in the domain of an English teacher in the Scottish education system than it would be of a computing teacher. So me and my colleagues in the English department, we kind of work together on this to try and, I do a lot of the kind of early year stuff. And by early years, I don't mean like primary 1 and 5 and 6 year olds, but I mean like earlier in secondary years. I will do a lot of the technical stuff with them, and I'll do a lot of the kind of idea of presentations. And then the English department, when they get those kids in later years, they start to focus on their sort of rhetorical content of the presentation. Knowing that I've already done all the skills that those kids need, and they've had all the practice that they need with me, and then they can focus on the bit that they actually assess for exam level work as well.
Yeah, you're right. That's, you know, we think that a lot of people just think presentations about technology, but it's as much being able to properly speak as it is anything. So you're right. It's a job for the English teacher as much as it is the technology person.
There's a huge number of skills that come together in this, I think, because there's the technology of how do we show things on the screen, obviously all the keynote PowerPoint stuff. There's a big element of kind of dramatic performance as well. You know, that was one of the things that we focus on a lot in our presentation skills, excuse me, class, is that it's not just about what you show on the screen, but it's about how you deliver it as well. So when we assess, and we'll talk about assessment in a little minute, we assess both the presentation aspect, but also the performance aspect of it as well. And there's separate mark breakdowns for both of those parts. And later on, I'll share with you the points that we look for in a presentation. I don't think those points are necessarily the best ones we could look for, and I want to revise them in the future. But I'll tell you what it is we do just now as well.
Well, it's just one of those situations where technology is really the tool and it's not the focus.
Yes.
You know, although this is a podcast and we're using a microphone or microphones, I guess we're both talking, we have computers. This is not a technology based podcast for that reason. We're talking about it, but these are the tools that we use. It's the tools of the trade, just as it is in, you know, woodshop or you know, like a home ec class, or, you know, they have their tools mm-hmm. that they use. The class isn't specifically about those, but you do also, part of it is knowing how to use those properly.
Yeah, and I think at different stages in your education as a presenter, you focus on different things. So the things I focus on primarily are structuring the story correctly, and then just getting over your fear of standing up in front of the class and saying something. In my first level class, the thing I want most is just for everybody to participate. And it's really, we'll talk more as well about giving assurances to pupils in this kind of situation, because it is something that's very kind of nerve wracking. And it's, for some pupils, it's almost impossible to get them over it. But I feel like I've had quite a good track record in being able to do that over time. And we'll talk about some of the ways that a teacher can do that as well.
It reminds me of the drafting class that I took in high school. I took 4 years of drafting, and the entire year of drafting one, we didn't touch the computer. We had the T-scale and we had the angled desk. Mm-hmm. And the teacher said, look, I'm not here to teach you a computer program. I'm here to teach you fundamentals of drafting. So we're going to start with the fundamentals of drafting. And that's with learning how to do it by hand. Because if you can do it by hand, you can do it better. You can do it better on the computer, and you know how to, you'll know the theory behind what the computer is doing.
Yeah, because I think it's fair to say that in that situation, a lot of the computer tools are actually based on the previous approach to that whole area. You're digitizing the paper version.
Absolutely. So, one of the things that I find incredibly valuable is watching other people present. Now, this is not saying you need to go on YouTube and just watch Steve Jobs clips. Because obviously Steve Jobs was a master presenter, but that's just one style of presentation, and you're not Steve Jobs. And just searching for different companies, keynotes and things like that, I find that very helpful. And just learning little cues that they do, watching their facial expression and picking up tips on what not to do.
Yeah, I do a thing. I mean, watching Steve Jobs, I think, is great because he was one of the more compelling presenters that we've seen in our lifetime. But he's by far not the only person you should watch. And one of the things I do with Steve Jobs presentations is I actually have a supercut of all the first 90 seconds of every Steve Jobs presentation, where he walks on the stage and he waits till everybody gives him his attention, and then he begins the presentation. And one of the things that I find that young presenters always really struggle with is how to get started and how to stop once they have started. And I have a supercut of both of those parts of all the Steve Jobs presentations, just to show here's a guy who really knows what he's doing, walking into a room, getting everybody's attention, and getting started.
And is that something that you have that we could throw on YouTube or something?
Yeah, maybe we could actually. I've just got it lying around on my computer, but it's an interesting and it's a very useful way to, if you just watch them back to back to back. I think there's maybe 15 different events in that little video that I've got, and you just see how consistent he does those things, and it's very interesting because occasionally in there I've got like Phil Schiller cut in and Tim Cook cut in, and it's noticeable, particularly the first one that Phil Schiller ever did, when he did Macworld by himself. I think he is very different and noticeably different to the way that Steve came on stage and took the applause and then got started with the presentation. So I'm a huge proponent of observing other presentations, and one of the other places that I use for that, Bradley, is TED Talks. And I'm not a slavish devotee of TED Talks. I think they have their place, and I think some of them are very interesting. But what you do get is you've got a massive library of presentations there that you can pull from to show children really, really good presentations in some cases, mediocre presentations in other cases, and in a few cases, absolutely atrocious presentations that should never have been released to the public, in my opinion. And what I tend to do when I start the class is each class I'll show them a presentation, and as we watch it, there's a kind of observation checklist that we look at to say things like, where does the presenter stand on the stage? Where do they give their eye focus and their attention? Do they use any notes? Are they using any props? How much do they move around on the stage? And just having the kids kind of break down what another presenter does. And then they would sort of reflect on it themselves and say, well, I enjoyed that presentation because this, 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 and this, or I thought it was badly done because of this and that and the next thing. And I think that's a very valuable exercise to go through before you ask the kids to start making their own presentation as well.
And it might be fun before you ever start teaching is to, find 30 presentations or 10 presentations and give them the links and say, I want you to tell me, watch all these presentations and tell me if they're good or bad and tell me why. And see what they come up with, like to see what they can pick up on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you ask things like, do you believe that person? Do you think they're trustworthy or not? And then why? And always asking that why question really leads them on to start breaking down what's actually going on in a presentation, that it's not just looking at pictures and hearing words said, but there's actually other things going on as well, such as in some cases the use of props, for example, or the use of examples or demonstrations. There's a really, really good presentation on TED from the guy who invented the Lifesaver water bottle, which is a kind of filtering water bottle for emergencies. And he actually has a fish tank in that presentation, and it's river water, and then he pours in like animal droppings and sewage plant runoff and mud and dirt and things. And then he fills his Lifesaver bottle and he drinks from that from that tank live on stage. And it's one of those examples where the kids always find it very sort of compelling because it's so disgusting. and then he drinks the water by himself. So it's that kind of thing. And there's another one that I like to use just while I'm on the topic. Ben Zander, who was the conductor of one of the orchestras in Chicago, I don't know if he still is or not, but he was at the time of this talk. And he does a presentation all about classical music, and he uses no slides whatsoever. All he does is he plays the piano when he talks. And I always use that one as well, because I think it's important to get over to the kids that a presentation doesn't necessarily mean that you're giving a slideshow. But you could actually present perfectly well without ever bringing your iPad up or connecting to a projector or showing anything on the screen, that you could do that too.
Well, you know, I've been reading a book called The QB by Bruce Feldman. It's about like the making of a modern quarterback in American football. And there's, mm-hmm. You know, it's a very complicated position. And they were talking about the fact that there are plenty of guys that are just naturally talented, and there are plenty of guys who have talent, but then they just work harder. And I think presentations is in some way this way, where there are people who are probably more naturally inclined to enjoy presenting. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're an extrovert and they're naturally a little bit more gifted. But a lot of this is just hard work and practice. You know, Steve Jobs wasn't a great presenter because he just woke up that way. He practiced. And I think that's something that the students need to be told and you know, basically ingrained in their minds, is it takes practice. You don't like make a PowerPoint and then just present it. You have to, you know, practice it and deliver it and learn your audio cues and learn how to pause and learn where to pause. And yeah, it takes practice.
Yeah, it's key. One of the key things is always to build in that growth mindset conversation that you have with students, where you can say, look, Steve Jobs wasn't some kind of demigod who just knew how to present. You're completely right on that point. This is a skill you can learn. Same way I could teach you to program a computer. Same way I'm going to teach you to build the slides. I can also teach you how to communicate with the audience using your voice and using gestures and where you stand and eye contact and all these different techniques as well.
Okay, just like I would like to think that we do a better job of podcasting today than we did on episode one, I would like to think, because we've been doing it longer. Just as, you know, I would like to think I do better at my job today than I did on day one. You practice, you're just going to get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and giving the students the opportunity to practice is really key. We'll talk about that in a little while.
Yeah, because a lot of times it's like all your time is spent making the PowerPoint.
Yeah, just searching Google Images for pictures all the time.
Right. So before we move on, let's thank our second sponsor of the night. It's the fine folks at Jamp Software. Now, Jamp Software is the premier MDM provider for Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in your schools. They are all Apple-focused, so it's not a second-tier platform to them. Jamp Software provides great management tools for schools that are deploying iPads, iPhones, Macs, and Apple TVs. They have a great app called Casper Focus that goes on the teacher's iPads that allows them to take control of their classroom, allows them to quickly gain students' attentions, conduct secure exams within an app, and they can even select a specific Apple TV assigned to their class. Now, again, Jamf is focused on Apple, so it's not one of those companies that Apple's a second-tier platform. It gets the new features last. When Apple has new stuff for iOS and Mac deployments, Jamf's right there with them. So if you want to learn more about what you can do with them, go to outofschool.net, and this is episode 116. And use a special link in our show notes, and that lets the fine folks at Jamf know that you came to them from our show. So thanks to Jamf for sponsoring the show this week.
Great. So I guess one of the questions really, Bradley, is what is it we look for in a presentation from a student?
Well, this is something that I remember learning in like elementary school. But again, this is before there was ever a PowerPoint, before we ever had computers. It was, how do you have eye contact with people? You know, how do you properly speak? You don't use slang words when you're, you know, talking. I don't mean, you know, things that are inappropriate, but you just speak properly. You know, don't use, eudonyms, or is that the correct word for there? Like, I'm trying to think of what I'm trying to say, but like, just basically talk properly and talk like you're, you know, an expert on the subject, and don't get up there and mumble and say, and things like that. Again, and we're not talking about, did you use PowerPoint correctly? It's like, are you able to speak in front of people, is really what it gets down to.
Yeah, and this is something that I try and build up in my class quite a lot. Is we'll start with really simple sort of like voice exercises that we'll do in class, such as the first thing I do is I just have everybody like go around where kids are sitting in the class and just have them stand up and say, hello, my name is whatever their name is, and my favorite flavor of ice cream is, and they'll name their favorite flavor of ice cream. And it's a meaningless exercise, but it just gets you over that barrier of having first said something to the class. And then we start working on being louder and being clearer and doing some sort of diction exercises and things like that. And then we move on to, you know, starting to put together a presentation as a whole. But I'll tell you, why don't I just talk you through just now, Bradley, the kind of, we have a rubric that we use for presentation skills, and it's broken into two parts. And I think this is probably quite a useful way to look at it. Although there's definitely other ways you could do this. I don't think this is the only way to assess a presentation, but it's something that our drama teacher and I developed a few years ago. And it's something I do want to revise it in the summer, because there's a couple of areas that overlap with each other. And if you do one of them badly, you can sort of lose points in two different areas. But let me just read it out to you and tell me what you think as we go along. So there's two parts to it. There's the slides, the design of the slides and so on. And then there's the performance aspect. And the performance aspect is broken down like this. And these are, it's written in terms of statements that the pupil could say if they get a high score. So the first aspect is, I have rehearsed my presentation thoroughly. And then they get graded 0, 1, 2, or 3 based on whether they have or haven't rehearsed properly. And the way you tell that is, are they stumbling over their words? Do they appear to know what comes next or not? And so on. The second one is, I can communicate and explain information, ideas, opinions, or processes. So that gives us scope to use that rubric to assess different kinds of presentation, whether it's just an information presentation or an opinion presentation. I can use an appropriate register to suit my purpose and audience, and I can use suitable vocabulary to communicate effectively with my audience. So one of the things that I sometimes see in sort of 10, 11-year-olds who I start this with is that it tends to be wee boys in particular who are really into something. They just give you chapter and verse of everything they know about Minecraft or World of Warcraft or military aviation or cars or whatever it is they're into. They're just so into it that they just, not only do they tell you everything, but they also assume that everybody else is just as into that topic as they are. So what quite often happens is that it's just, you know, acronym after acronym and fact after fact after fact, like a kind of Wikipedia Easter egg hunt. And everybody else is just sitting there going, I don't know what's going on here, because they haven't used suitable vocabulary. They haven't pitched it at the right level for their audience. And that's those are two marks where boys in particular tend to score very badly on their first presentation and really have to simplify to come up over time. A couple of other parts in the performance aspect. One is, I speak confidently in a loud and clear voice. I can maintain eye contact with my audience, and I can communicate in a clear and expressive way where my voice is intonation and my tone is varied. And that last part, Bradley, is designed to differentiate between the students who are reading from their presenter notes and those students who have learned their presentation and are really kind of delivering it from the heart, if you like, rather than just by reading it off the slides.
And I'll tell you, that one to me is like the key thing is like, do I feel like you believe what you're saying? And, or do I feel like even if you've memorized it, you basically have the index cards in front of you. You're reading it off and you're doing like the typical look up for 2 seconds, look back down, look up for 2 seconds, look back down. Like, to me, I want to feel like that you know it and you've studied it and you can do it with passion. I know not every topic is like, you know, passionate. It may be something like why you should treat your house with these pest control chemicals. You know, that's not very exciting. But do you know what I'm saying? Like, I just want to feel like that you studied it enough where you can talk about it off the cuff and passionately. And maybe it is very well rehearsed, but doesn't feel rehearsed.
That's the key thing, I think. And it's really that I just feel that what gets you to that level is rehearsal. And I keep emphasizing to kids, just, you know, practice this, practice this, practice this. And I set homework, like, go home and practice this 5 times. And parents come to me at parents' night and they're kind of like, you're kidding about this 5 times stuff. And I'm like, no, that's the bare minimum. You really need to do something like that to get the score you're looking for. So that's the performance aspect. Those are 7 points in the performance aspect. There's also the appearance aspect or the kind of structure and appearance of the slides. And those There's actually a bit more in that. There's 9 aspects in this. Let me just read them out to you again, Bradley. The first one is, I can organize essential information in a logical order. And it's remarkable how often students don't do this. In particular, the idea of essential information, something I see very, very often is that kids will, they'll give you some irrelevant fact right up at the front of their presentation. And it's like, is that really the most important thing? Like, I had somebody who recently did a presentation on Apple, and the first slide they gave you was a picture of Steve Jobs, and then they told me his date of birth and date of death. I was like, is that the number one fact you want to tell me about Apple, is when Steve Jobs was born and when he died? No. So then we have a conversation about what's essential, and also then in which order does it come? One of the fascinating things about order, I don't know if you've ever seen this happen, Bradley, but I had, for a couple of years running, I had a couple of boys do presentations about Marvel Comics. And I was like, right, this is great. I'm going to hear about Marvel Comics, blah, blah, blah. And then what they did was they basically started with like the first Spider-Man movie. I was like, wait a minute, there's like 50 years of Marvel Comics history you haven't thought of yet. And they were like, for them, Marvel Comics was basically the movies. And then some tie-in comic books and merchandise. I was like, wait a minute, there's like 50 years of Marvel Comics history you haven't told me. So get your order straight first. So essential information in a logical order is a very, very important part of the presentation. The second one is that my presentation clearly communicates the structure of my talk. And the reason that's there is because what I'll do is I'll have the kids work on a paper planner first for the presentation, where they'll lay out the points they're going to make and write about what they're going to put on the screen for those points. And then that part of the rubric is designed to make sure that they match up what they plan to do with what they actually did. And that's in there. Then we have things like one's called transitions and builds are used to communicate meaning, because you've seen this, I've seen this, we've all seen it, where kids do their first presentation and they just go nuts with transitions. Every transition in the entire palette is out at some point in the presentation. And I really try and encourage kids not to do that. And what I found this year when I did this class was I made such a fuss about that nobody used any transitions at all. So everybody got a 0 for that because nobody used the transition in the whole thing. So then we said, well, okay, now let's talk about when it's appropriate to use the transition and when it's not. And some kids got that and some didn't. We also have, I use a consistent visual appearance in my presentation, which is to do with things like the use of font and background colors and picture borders, and try and make that all fit together nicely. Choosing appropriate fonts, colors, and sizes to make any text visible so that it's not too big or it's not too light colors, one on top of the other or something like that. And then the next point is I can use images of the correct resolution to avoid a poor quality appearance. So instead of just taking small thumbnails from Google Image Search or whatever, that they'll take the time to find proper resolution, large-scale photographs that fill the screen. We also have my slides are clear and uncluttered. The tendency towards clutter, particularly, I find in those pupils who want to do that, I'm an expert on this topic, let me tell you everything I know about it, is that they just ram in every picture they can think of about everything they want to say, which is already too much, and they put it all up on the screen as well. And that's, I'm trying to encourage students to simplify more and more as well. Then the last two are, one is just I don't use jokey or random pictures or language. And the reason we put that in there was because when we first started doing this kind of stuff, a lot of kids would, you know, finish the presentation with like a kind of Looney Tunes picture, you know, that's all folks or something like that. And that was something we wanted people not to do. So we put that in there. And then finally, I can finish my presentation appropriately using contact information or other details that are professional. So just, again, assessing that ability to kind of finish the presentation instead of just sort of falling off the end of your slides and going, oh, well, that's it then. Actually having a final thank you slide or something like that to make sure you kind of get off the horse without losing your place as well.
One of the things I always recommend to students on the finish is to always have a blank slide at the end. And so like if they hit their clicker on the last slide, it doesn't go back to the main keynote screen, you know, showing their presentation, showing the computer wallpaper. They just have like a black slide. You know, I always do that at the front and at the end. You kind of sandwich it with two solid black slides.
Yeah, that's a great tip. That's something that we encourage them to do as well. That's very, very useful to do.
But now that's, that rubric is pretty expansive. And, you know, I think it's, you know, neat that you, you know, one of the things you, it's not like you can insert an image into a keynote. That's not one of the things you're studying. It's knowing how to use appropriate images is where you expect them to know how to either do that or figure out how to do it. And I think that's an important distinction on where we're at in our technology integration in the classroom, is it's less about like, you know, file insert or insert image. It's, you know, if you need obviously insert an image, fine, you need to figure out how to do it appropriately. But in terms of like how to do it, like figure it out. Like you can search Google on how to insert images into Keynote.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that learning to insert the image is a 20-minute exercise. But this is a whole term's worth of work. And my presentation skills topic tends to run about 8 to 9 weeks of three hours a week over the course of the first term in the school year. So we spend a lot of school time on it. But we do feel it is an extremely valuable skill for those students who will really master it. They will really differentiate themselves from other pupils because of this skill. I'll tell you, just to give you an anecdote about that. Colleagues were at an event at which presentation was being discussed as part of assessment. And the person who was running the event said, well, you know, of course, secondary school students, you can hardly really get them to say anything because they're secondary school students and none of them are ever any good at presentations, am I right, kind of thing. And our teacher sort of looked at each other and they were like, well, actually not. You know, we consider almost all of our pupils to be much better than the average in this area because we do spend this kind of time on it. And this is deliberate because one of the things that we decided a number of years ago was that of all the office packages that you could be really good at, if you think about it, word processing isn't the most important one. Word processing is a skill that, not to put too fine a point on it, that secretaries do. The important people in an organization have people to do word processing for them. But presentation and persuasion is a CEO-level skill. It's something, you know, Steve Jobs didn't staff out the Macworld presentation to anybody. He did it himself. And even Tim Cook does it himself and so on. And all... persuading people of the importance of your ideas and your organization is such a valuable skill that we decided to put a lot of effort into. And we're really starting to see it pay off now.
So let's think about like, you know, go back and we've talked about what makes a good presentation. And what makes a good slide? I would say that a clear point, obviously proper grammar, and I think you hit on this, like a professional approach and consistency. So it's like you're not changing fonts, you know, from side to side, you're not changing backgrounds from side to side. Like it looks professional. It looks like you've thought this through and, you know, you care what people think about this. This is more than just a grade. And that's something that you a lot of times you don't see. It's like people will, you know, throw in like clip art from the internet. You can obviously tell it's like, you know, the animated GIF that's like, you know, the construction man. It's like, no, that's not appropriate. That's not appropriate. And so, I think those are like, again, like you said, those are things you can talk about in like 20 minutes. Like, here's what makes a good slide. That's not a three-week course.
Yeah. Do you know one of the hardest things I found this year to communicate to the kids was what do you do when the aspect ratio of the picture you've got doesn't match the aspect ratio of your slide? And what I found was that kids would either, they would basically butt it up against the top and bottom of the slide and they would have pillar boxes at either side, or they would letterbox it, or they would do something that just didn't look good. And what I spent a lot of time introducing kids to was if your picture won't fill the slide easily, use the photo frame feature in Keynote to put it in, inset it, make it actually smaller. Don't fill the screen with it and fit it in to that area. And then we looked at things like masking and things like that as well to make it match a little bit better with other pictures. So doing that kind of stuff, adapting images is something that's a valuable skill when it comes to gaining that consistency score, really.
Let's take our final sponsor of the night. It's the fine folks at Shobee. Now, Shobee is an iPad app that is at the center of a paperless teacher's life. I mean, this is what they're aiming to be. Teachers can quickly and easily assign, collect, and review student work on their iPads, and then they can provide rich feedback to students by adding annotations, text notes, and voice notes directly onto the documents. Students can show their learning creatively by submitting to Shelby from thousands of compatible iPad apps or by completing assignments with Shelby's built-in tools. Shelby keeps everyone organized with individual student assignment folders, email, and push notifications. Now, Shelby Basic is completely free, and teachers can get started today with their students in just a few minutes. You can go and search Shelby on the App Store or go to Shelby.com. Now, they're also offering a special deal to listeners of our podcast. If you buy Shelby Pro for 5 teachers, they will upgrade you to 10 teachers for the price of 5. So that's 10 teachers, all of their students on Shelby Pro for a full year for the price of 5. Go to Shobie.com/out of school for details. That's Shobie.com/out of school for details. And we'll have that link into the show notes. So what are like the tools of the trade, like from the presenter? Like what's, you know, when you're saying like these are what you need to be ready for on P-Day, presentation day. You know, obviously you need to have something that you're presenting on, computer, iPad, iPhone even. Today, the last few times I presented from my iPhone. Really just worked well. Obviously, we prefer Keynote, but PowerPoint is an appropriate tool. I mean, as long as you stay away from the themes that everyone seems to use, in my opinion. When I'm going to present, I assume they have no adapters. So bring all the adapters you have. DVI, VGA, HDMI, anything you think you might need, have it in your bag.
Yeah, I think our pupils are particularly adept at dealing with Apple TV not working. They get more practice at fixing stupid Apple TV than anything else that we do. That's the thing. And I guess in some ways having flaky Apple TV in the mix is quite good, because what it does is it gives students an opportunity to not get flustered when something goes wrong, because something does go wrong eventually in your presentation or not. But I think that I don't particularly ask the students to really worry about the technical aspect of doing a presentation too much, although that may be something that would be worth adding in. It's like, here's a bag of stuff, make a presentation happen. And they've got to figure out the connectors themselves as well. But I tend to focus more on the performance aspect and have them assume that somebody else is going to take care of that for them.
Well, yeah, that's really important you said that, because that's one of the points I had here was like learning how to be flexible and assuming everything you have is going to be broken.
Yeah.
And let's say your computer doesn't boot. You know, do you know your material well enough that you don't need the slides and you could still present? Like that's part of being prepared, because it's very possible, you know, your keynote might be corrupt or you don't have a backup or your computer is dead. You forgot the charger. That, you know, technology is great for presenting, but you don't have to be reliant on it. You know, you are the presentation. It's not your computer.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose at school level, it's rare for anybody to have that level of confidence or to have that level of rehearsed time under their belt for them to be able to actually do the presentation off the cuff. Now, I have a number of presentations that I do a lot, and if you broke my computer right before the presentation, I could probably do that presentation from memory. But I've done that maybe 50 times now, and our students have maybe practiced theirs 10 times and done it 3 times. So they probably don't have quite the same level of memory for doing that as I would. But it would be good to maybe occasionally pull a plug in somebody and see how they get on.
Yeah, it's like pick one random student, and if they do it well and don't get flustered, like A+ for the class, you win the award. Yeah. Something like that, you want a prize. Like,
give them the Kobayashi Maru of presentations. Which I might add is having Richard Stallman in the audience while you talk about iPad. Ever tell you my Richard Stallman story?
No, let
me tell you the story. I was presenting a sort of science and technology festival in Edinburgh. And it was maybe 18 months after our iPad deployment started, and we'd got a lot of kind of press and stuff, and I was invited along to go and talk about what we were doing with iPad in school. And for reasons unknown, Richard Stallman was presenting the same day, and he had already presented before I got there, or maybe he presented the day before, but he was in the audience for my presentation, and the room was maybe 2/3 full, and most people are sitting towards the front, and he sat alone in the back row, And during my entire presentation, conducted a conversation at essentially normal volume with somebody who was talking to him. And then as I was wrapping up, he just sort of stood up right at the back of the presentation, put two hands right in the air and just gave me two gigantic thumbs down gestures right in front of my line of sight, which I wasn't expecting him to love my presentation, but I wasn't expecting that either. And then in the Q&A session, he sort of got up and just took over the mic, the question mic, and just gave this massive rant about how evil Apple was. And I was just like, well, that's that. So that's my best war story about being heckled in a presentation, is by Richard Stallman.
Yeah, I don't think many people could say that.
Yeah, the good thing to know is that he won't be listening because he can't run anything that can decode an AEC file. So I can just say what I like about him right here.
Yeah, that's true, because that's Insider Tip. Our podcast is AAC. We upload it. It may be converted to MP3 on the fly.
We do that just so Richard Stallman can't listen to it.
So let's talk about the structure of how this works in the classroom. Like, you know, when a student is presenting, how does this work in terms of the assessment and feedback and things
so
like that?
So the way I do it, I told you that it takes quite a long time. We spend a lot of class time on it. And what we do is, in early years of doing this, what I would do is I would have kids create a presentation and then deliver it, and then create another one based on the feedback from the first one and deliver that, and then do the same thing again. But in recent years, what I've started to do is to have them pick one topic and create one presentation and then deliver it three times. So that this, and obviously they can refine the presentation as well as refining their delivery of it over the course of the term. But it's one presentation done three times. And what I do is I record a video of the people doing their presentation, and I share that back with the people. And then afterwards, I'll assess that video, and I'll give them the feedback based on that. So I used to, before we had easy access to video cameras and so on, I would try and mark their presentation as they delivered it. But these presentations tend to be quite short, and it's quite hard to get through a rubric as big as that rubric that I've already told you about within 3 minutes or whatever, and also write a comment as well. So the advent of being able to record on an iPhone and save that video and share it back to the pupil has also enabled us to do a better and a more consistent marking than trying to mark it on the fly, which is has always been quite difficult. So what we hope with that is that we're able to not only mark better and give better feedback, but also the student gets a record of what they did on the stage. Because when you're a beginning presenter, like, the adrenaline is flowing so fast and you're so focused on not embarrassing yourself in front of the class, the children literally cannot remember what happened on the stage when they were speaking, because they're so focused on getting the presentation done and getting off the stage. So having a video to show them back is something that's really, really powerful. I mean, I had an example this year where somebody in the class, when they were speaking, they just said, like literally every sort of two words. And what I said to them, look, you did a great presentation, but you said error just so many times that it was noticeable. I mean, everybody says it occasionally. I've said it on this podcast. I say it every week, but hopefully it's not too noticeable. But his was very noticeable. And he said, I don't think I really did that. I said, yeah, you really did that. And he said, well, I don't think I say that at all. And I said, well, look, let's just watch this video and count it on our fingers. And we quickly ran out of fingers the number of times he said it. So having that kind of feedback is really, really useful. And what I've noticed since we started doing the video feedback is that the kids have gotten much better, much more quickly than they ever did before. And I think it's a super powerful tool for particularly this kind of work. But it's also useful in other subjects as well. But I think it's really useful here.
Well, it's kind of like using the Coach's Eye app with baseball.
Yeah.
When you're a hitter, you go up there and you can't be thinking about your technique when you're hitting. You just got to hit. You work on your technique during practice and in the batting cage and things like that. And it's helpful to have that feedback of a live game, because you can go back and analyze it and think about it. But when you get up there, it's just got to be automatic. And that's the same thing in presentations. When you've got to be up there, you're not thinking about, well, I've got to make sure that I hit this just right. You've just got to do it. Your practice has to take over. And again, being able to do these assessments helps the student to like think about things, because I'm sure there are things that we all do in presenting that you don't necessarily realize.
Yeah, no, that's very, very true. And I think you're right to mention Coach's Eye. And I've actually used Coach's Eye as an app to grade presentations before. I tend not to do it so much anymore because I find that giving written feedback and then the student watching the video for themselves is actually more powerful than them watching a video of me watching a video of them, which is what Coach's Eye can sometimes be, particularly when you're not really using the sort of telestrator features that Coach's Eye can really give you. So I feel like that kind of analysis is much better used for sports. But just going to give you a little technical part, Bradley, on what we do in terms of the actual recording and the, where does the video live and so on, because this is something that when you start to use video as an assessment tool, you can start to deal with a lot of data very quickly that can be quite problematic for schools that don't have good storage systems and good networking as well. So what I do is I record each pupil on my iPhone just because I've got a tripod clip for my phone. And what I do then is once I've recorded it, I will render the video. I will title it in iMovie before I do. And it's really important to do that because that way you can put like the person's name and the date of the recording right on the video, which is metadata that can never really be lost as long as you've still got the file. And then what I'll do is I'll save it to Google Drive. And you can do that straight on the phone. You just pick it out in the app and just upload it to the cloud. And then what I do is I share that back with the individual pupil because all our kids are logged into their own Google Drive app as well. And I used to, and when iOS 7 first came out, I used to use AirDrop to send that file back to the pupil's iPad. But the nice thing about doing it through Google Drive is that you can do it offline. So I can upload them all at home. I can share the file directly with the other student. And A, it doesn't take up space on their device. But B, it also doesn't require me to stand there with them and wait till a 500 meg file transfers to their device. So it's easier to do it offline in Google Drive, and then I can walk into the classroom the next day and say, hey, everybody, in your Google Drive is your video from yesterday, and they can go and watch it themselves straight away, which is great. When you are videoing pupils, obviously there's a data protection aspect to this, which schools who are going to do this should have covered already. This should be more broadly covered than just for your class, and we obviously have those agreements in place with parents. But it's more important, or it's as important, to give assurances to the pupil themselves that, okay, we're going to video you, but I promise you that I will not play this video back to the class without your permission first. And that's something that I find really important to give to students, because the act of videoing somebody can actually change their performance quite substantially. And it's important for them to know that the video will only be seen by me and them unless they decide that somebody else gets to see it as well. And giving that reassurance and living up to it is really important as well. A couple of technical details. One is that it's really important not to rely on the iPhone or the iPad microphone for this, particularly if you're videoing it from some distance in a classroom, because the mic will just not pick up what the pupils are saying, particularly if their voices are not particularly strong or loud in any way. So what I do is I have an external microphone. It's a Samsung Meteor microphone. And there are some apps. The one I use is called Filmic Pro, F-I-L-M-I-C Pro. And it is one of the few camera apps that will actually let you record the audio from an external USB microphone connected through the camera connector kit. Most apps don't let you do that, but Filmic Pro is one that does, which is really, really good. And it lets you get a really nice clear audio sound so you can properly assess what they said as well, and the tone of voice and everything, because you can clearly hear it on the audio as well. And then finally, take it into iMovie, title the clip, and then upload to Google Drive. And I usually use 540 or 720 size. Obviously, don't use the large size, just to save time in transferring the file as much as anything else.
It doesn't have to be 1080p.
It does not, no. Although Filmic Pro will record at the highest possible resolution of the camera. I've got a 64 gig phone, but I find after a class of recording 10 or 12 of those for 5 minutes at a time, I need to process them pretty quickly or my phone's almost going to be full by the end of the day. So it's something to bear in mind as well.
I wonder why more apps don't let you use the external microphone.
I don't know. I guess it's something maybe just doesn't come for free with the AV Capture framework. I mean, Filmic Pro does a lot of custom stuff. It lets you do control of focus and exposure separately and things like that. More camera apps do that now, and since iOS 8 gave some more APIs for that. But it's where the audio comes from is something that's not always. For example, the built-in iOS camera app doesn't give you the audio track from a USB microphone.
Yeah, that's we'll put a link to that app in the show notes. I know you've used that for years now, mm-hmm. So that's definitely is it continually staying updated and things like that with new iOS updates?
Yeah, they've updated it for iPhone 6 Plus. It's certainly been updated for iOS 8. So I'm happy to use that. I don't use it as my normal camera app. I just normally use the iOS camera app. But for this particular application, you know, doing video with an external microphone is definitely the app that I would use.
Yeah, that's one of those hardware things that the iPhone and the iPad certainly could get better with over time, is a better built-in mic, better built-in speakers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think just being able to record from a further distance, I mean, I put quite a long USB microphone cable on the microphone to make sure it's positioned relatively close to the student who's speaking. But with it being such a better microphone, it doesn't have to be that close. Whereas with the built-in onboard microphones, you would want to be pretty close to get a reasonable audio recording as well.
And these are one of those activities that where iOS really shines over Chrome OS.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, your setup is technical, but it's not. I mean, you've kind of got your workflow, and you've got your chosen app and your chosen hardware, and it's really pretty simple once you get going.
Yeah, I find that once you get into the groove of it, you can crank through it pretty quickly. The slowest part is actually putting the titles on in iMovie. One of the ways that you can do a little bit better with that now is if you have iMovie installed, you can apply a title to a clip. In the camera app itself, you don't have to necessarily go to iMovie, but sometimes you might want to do that just to, because I think, you know, some of the titles, if you put them on, they appear across like the clip for the entire duration of the clip. And what you really want is a title that will appear for 10 seconds or a minute and then go away again. And that requires a little bit more editing in iMovie.
Well, I think this is a skill that more and more students need. I think every student needs. This is one of those skills that your curriculum committee or whoever decides how you do things in your school would be time well spent to think through either how you teach this. Do you teach this at all? And if you do, can you do it better? I mean, not saying that we have all the answers here, because we certainly don't, but I think it's just worth thinking about, because it is so important. You know, in this century and in this decade, that students be able to communicate well. You always say life's about who you know and not what you know. And it's all about, you know, teaching people how to communicate properly, which that translates not into just being able to present well in your job, but being able to communicate well with people. If you have an idea, you can, you know, talk to your boss about it and share it in a way that is convincing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I'll tell you a story. I've had students who have been offered jobs before they left school on the basis of their presentation skills. We took a group to do a presentation at a trade show one time, and one of the pupils who was on stage, when she got off stage, a guy walked up to her and gave her his business card, and he said, you know, call me for a job when you get out of school. That presentation was fantastic, and I want you working for my company. She was about 13 at the time.
It's like the equivalent of trying to sign a 7-year-old player or a 7th grader to a sports scholarship, yeah, exactly. When they're like, yeah, commit to this college. Like, yeah. So anything else we want to add for this topic?
Well,
today?
That's how I do things. That's how we do things at Cedars. I would be very interested in any feedback from Andy who's listening, who does things a different way or who include things that I've not thought about, because we are actually going to try and revise this rubric over next summer and see if there's anything we can bring in that's a little bit more, basically a little bit more difficult. Because what I've found over the years is that as the kids have become more familiar with the whole thing, that scores are just kind of going up and up and up in my class. And I want to include some more kind of stretching goals to try and really sort of grade people properly throughout the whole thing. So I want some new ideas on that. So if Andy has ideas, let me know.
And get in touch with us at outofschool.net. There's a feedback form, and if we get some good ones, we'll read them on the show next week, and we'll kind of work through those. So, again, I think this is a great topic. I was so excited that we're going to talk about it because I think it's so important for kids of 2014. I mean, being able to assemble a PowerPoint or a keynote isn't the skill we're after. It's being able to communicate well. That's the skill we're after.
Well, let's face it. There's enough people who are not good at doing presentations. We don't need to be creating any more of them. The way I see it is, when you kids grow up, if I have to sit through your presentation, I want it to at least be interesting.
That's true. Well, thanks to all of our sponsors for this week. That was Shobi, Squarespace, and Jamp. You can learn more about the products they offer at outofschool.net. Again, I'm always on the web at chambersdaily.com. And my Twitter account is Bradley Chambers.
And I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web.
Have a great week, everybody.